The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you. In which our heroes draw a card.
Hello, audience. Welcome to episode 28 of The Big Red Couch. I guess I'll draw a card.
Seems rude not to.
That feels like a good one. We have Apocalypse Engine from Just Dave and the Thursday Gamers from Montreal.
Alright.
Apocalypse Engine.
That could be a number of things. That's going to be cool.
Immediately suggests the game system, so...
Apocalypse. Kind of does.
Or the video game Chaos Engine.
That's been re-released recently.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yep.
Pretty much as was.
It was quite a pretty game for the time.
For the Amiga?
Yes.
The Internal Combustion Apocalypse.
Well, we shall go have my fights about that and see you guys in a minute.
Some days later.
Hello, listener, and welcome to the Big Red Couch. On the couch today, we have myself, Craig,
Kev,
Tonya,
and Ben.
I'm so relieved I got it right this time.
That was brilliant. Yeah. I just did the show notes for that one a little while ago, so that was fantastic. And our topic today is Apocalypse Engine, which comes to us from Just Dave and the Thursday Gamers of Montreal.
Thanks, guys. We've had a few of these through lately. And they're,
indeed. There's been a drift of them in the corner of the box or something, which suggests that our mixology really isn't going as well as we'd like to believe.
Problem of the quantum foam, I suspect.
Nice. Quantum. Completely relieves us of any responsibility whatsoever. Like it.
This also relieves responsibility for picking the topic.
It does.
So it's not our fault for a change.
Nice.
I think it's going to be not our fault for quite some time, because having done a quick card count, there are more cards in the mystery box now that have come to us from the wild blue yonder than we came up with for ourselves, so...
We are absolved of all responsibility forever.
It's awesome!
Wow. That's fantastic. We also have, for at some point during the show, some suggestions from Gulo T on this topic, but... They should maybe be left to the end.
Fair enough.
Primarily because, being as they are from Gulo T, they involve revolting plays on words.
Of course they do. I actually have two ideas because I scribbled something down a few weeks ago and came up with a completely different idea this morning. So
cool.
I would like, if possible, to do those separately.
That's fine. It's good because the more the contentier. Possibly not merrier, but...
I'm not sure those are words.
Well... Do you want to start off and then we can come back, or is that how
that would work? That would work, yeah.
Okay.
I'll put it into the minutes in the order of meeting. Or more accurately, I won't.
Okay, so the first idea I came up with was the Apocalypse Engine is a thing. It is a huge crew-served weapon. I was thinking along the lines of one of those ridiculous tanks in Valkyria Chronicles.
Yes.
Sort of on the larger size of things, but... The players are a minor crew, a clean-up crew, so janitorial. Mm-hmm. They're on the Apocalypse Engine full-time, but they're not really au fait with what it does or how it does it. The idea that I had was that they have been left aboard when anyone who knows what they're doing got off. Somehow the big button has been pressed, and the PCs have the choice now to escape in time, or figure out how to switch it off.
Interesting.
Or alternatively, that they start off the Apocalypse Engine and have to sneak aboard in order to find out what it does and then sneak back out and publish or break it before anything happens.
Okay.
Kind of thing. So those are the ways that game could go.
Those are some options that had never occurred to me in a million years. The whole idea of it being a crew-served weapon. I like the idea of connecting it to Valkyria Chronicles, where you can say, ah yes, this is two metric ridiculousnesses of tank.
You can tell because it's got a bendy section in the middle like one of them buses.
Yes.
Except it's 3 miles tall.
So it has crew quarters.
Yeah.
Right. It's not just crew served, it is habitable.
Yeah.
Cool. It's an ogre scale.
I'll believe you.
It's basically a cruise liner with treads.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea though that I was thinking. Yeah. More like Howl's Moving Castle, but like not magic.
Yeah.
A land going. Supercarrier, kind of.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yes, I definitely have my interest tweaked by the idea that they are living inside this device and are relatively lowly mooks. Then the hilarity of having the rest of the hierarchy disappear and
maker that was very paranoid, actually, having him run around trying to figure out what's going on.
I have this idea it's possible that they've been using the heating piles to brew something fairly noxious and drank themselves deaf the previous night. So they didn't hear the awoogas that was get the fuck off.
You may actually be responsible for the sounds in question, but
yeah. Indeed.
Drinking oneself deaf is good. Yeah.
I am reminded of the bit from the movie Under Siege with the whole thing of you've got various incredibly military things happening and then somebody complaining, come on, I was ironing during the Gulf War. But it's the laundry department. Yeah, somebody from the laundry department and one of the cooks and, you know, a guy who's paint scraper in chief.
The guy whose sole responsibility is to find out if there is anything land going that they can use the barnacle scrapers on.
Mm.
Cool.
Okay, shades of Gormenghast there.
Maybe a little.
Shades of Red Dwarf as well. The literal red shirts, but...
Chicken soup vending machine, maintenance technician, third class.
Yes.
Okay. If it was a you must escape from the apocalypse engine, then I'm definitely getting a convention game feel.
Actually, yeah.
Well, if you wanted a fairly high attrition rate, you could do worse than a modified version of Zombie Cinema. Though Paranoia, or if you were going with the full-out comedy, something like Toon would also be a...
Toon would be perfect. That would be a fun one. Lift the mood while you're busy wandering around flapping your hands because you've got no idea what's going on.
If on the other hand, you were doing the whole, okay, so everybody's vanished, but, you know, if you've got this enormous crew-habitated weapon, presumably there is somebody to fight against. So you could potentially get yourself a campaign of the laundry staff, the water purification technicians, and everybody else attempting to find the control room, because it's possible they've never been there if the place is big enough.
Oh, absolutely.
And figure out how to stop this machine, which, for all they know, it may just be sitting dead in the water in the middle of a desert or somewhere. Or it may be that somebody has wired down the dead man's switch, that they've got sort of a brick on the accelerator, and this thing is just treadling off in a straight line for somewhere. And, you know, when they get to a window, they can see this, but they've still got to figure out where the hell the bridge is.
Okay, so you're thinking this is a thing where nobody's seen the bridge crew in some time.
I'm still liking the they got very drunk. It was just a case of, you know, some event occurred. For the purposes of the game, it may not even matter what, but you could hypothesise of, all right, in a desperate effort, it has been decided that they're going to take the apocalypse engine, they're going to aim it properly, and they're going to just send this indestructible thing with, you know, some tweaks made to the reactor so that it will probably explode at about the right point, and just aim it for the heart of the opposing empire, because there is nothing that will stop it. The Awooga sirens went off, these idiots were drunk out of their minds and missed it, and so they have absolutely no idea where they are, where they're going, and why.
It rings a little bit Dr. Strangelove to me. The idea might follow that this glorious doomsday device has been created to be the ultimate deterrent. And these poor schmucks have been told that they are going down with the ship. The entire crew is going to march gloriously into the inevitable fireball of this thing. And they were told that everyone was going to go down with the ship. They got hammered. For understandable reasons.
Does explain the party, yes.
Yeah. And everyone else was evacuated in an orderly fashion.
And nobody noticed that the laundry division, and depending on the size of the thing, it may be an actual division, was mysteriously light.
Hmm.
If you wanted a slightly more serious con game angle on it was an option. I really like the Toon idea. But rather than having them as necessarily the crew who got stuck for silly reasons, if we have the idea of some kind of cataclysmic war machine that's set off in a straight line and people are trying to stop it, you could have any kind of genre from International Rescue, from
Thunderbirds,
mm-hmm. or Global Frequency, or mm-hmm. Atomic Robo, or anything else. It is basically trying to get on board and stop it.
Okay, so that's kind of a midway between the two possibilities. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of the poor, abandoned, hungover schmucks. Maybe the last best hope on the basis that the orders were scrambled, the triggering of the ultimate doomsday rampage, was a mistake. And they're the only people inside the defences who can defuse the thing before it rolls over the border and the conflict escalates. So they are the only folks left on board who can stop this monster before the world ends.
Shades of the game Iron Helix there, because that was quite an old computer game at this point, that had a ship, the crew is dead, and you're trying to stop the damn thing before it reaches its destination. Because it's basically a ship in the middle of a war game where something's gone a little bit wrong and it's targeted itself onto a real target.
Someone ran the not training program.
Indeed, somebody forgot to tick that box. And we've all missed them. But this was one that would have been worth ticking the this is a drill checkbox.
Indeed. Yep. Okay, so if you're going with the other variant where you are guerrilla journos.
Ooh.
Breaking in saying, oh my god, there is this thing. Everybody needs to know.
The mere existence of this thing is a thing. Yeah.
Basically, the game is get in, take pictures, get out. Which means that it's a crew-served weapon that is absolutely crawling with people.
Yep. Espionage.
Along the lines of, you see people who spelunk in the missile silos in the States. You get pictures of those sometimes.
Urban exploration.
Yeah.
Oh. If you wanted to make it a campaign,
mm.
you could have urban exploration people who found something and, like my brother once did upon encountering a bulldozer, wondered what the red button did.
Right, so it's urban exploration slash we accidentally switched it on.
Yes, what happens if the designer, the crazy mad scientist who buried it under Wyoming or something, is long since moved on or dead, and so you've got this thing that's just started trundling across the landscape. We have to figure out, holy shit, how do we stop this before we get noticed and blamed? I think that's a little bit late for that. Part of the state just started moving. versus, okay, what does it do? Oh, that's bad. And, you know, this kind of gradual thing. The getting the information out angle in its own would be really neat.
Okay. Because what you're talking about there is sort of slightly urban exploration and a little bit Eureka.
Yeah.
So you probably want something fatey for that, so you've got a bit of scope. To what each of the characters can do.
And enough kind of mechanical teeth and the like that you can have people discovering information and have it be interesting. Kind of this what is this thing?
Whereas for the first one, I'm kind of getting this image. There was a con game that I heard about that had a timer.
Yes, I can recall that one. That was something that I think Fred Hicks of Evil Hat had been working on. I cannot remember the name of the game or whether it even had one at that stage. It was an attempt to replicate movies in the Escape from Blah.
That would fit.
The action thriller type of movie.
Mm.
And it had the doom clock with this timer that when it hits, I forget the details, it was podcast. The whole game, including explaining the rules to a bunch of people and playing it, took place in around 2 hours. I will find a link and put it in the show notes. It was a really interesting concept, which I could not even attempt to do justice to from memory. But yeah, it was extremely narrative.
Okay. Well, it strikes me that that might be a good way to start the hungover schmucks trapped on a working weapon. Assuming your aim is either to stop it or get off.
For a pure investigation one, I'm wondering whether something in the inspector's line, where to a great extent what is being discovered by the investigators is defined by the players, to my understanding.
Yep, it could function as the core of an inspector's thing. I'm not sure if it's it might be like a monster of the week kind of thing. If it's more like that, I'm sure if it would cope with... Inspector seems better for something where you can sort of dip into these sort of scenarios and then react to them, rather than it being sort of an ongoing business.
Right.
Okay.
It'll be a very big monster of the week. That's kind of cool.
Maybe as a season ender type thing for inspectors.
It would be notable.
Indeed.
The zombie cinema idea could work that you brought up as well, because if it is trundling across the landscape, then you could have all sorts of issues where initially it's just moving inexorably. And then... You figure out where it's moving to. And then as you go down the track, possibly more of it turns on. Possibly more of it gets turned on by you trying to turn it off.
Yeah.
And you start getting other systems coming online, which means that you get less help from the outside and other stuff.
Possibly the outside is attacking the Apocalypse Engine because they don't know that it's been turned on by people who don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's still, and the thresholds will represent it just crossed city limits and is now mowing through suburban housing.
Planes incoming.
Yeah.
Yes, we are crossing into an area that is entirely paved with puppy orphanages and the nice sort of nuns.
There will be an incident.
Yeah.
I had a landlady with very specific opinions on what the nice sort of nuns were.
Far away?
No, no. She had been educated by nuns, who she hated.
Mm.
And there was somebody else she knew who had been educated by nuns who were absolutely lovely. And so she had very definitive views on the different sorts of nuns and which were the good ones and which weren't.
I see. I think the discussion of what differentiates the two, probably for later.
And not on air. Yeah. We want to keep our audience.
They might be a nun. It seems unlikely.
It does seem unlikely.
Is anybody else wondering whether there is a regular D&D game at the Vatican? I mean,
there's enough people there. It would shock me if there wasn't.
I mean, maybe not D&D.
Did you meet the Vatican astrologer at one point?
Astronomer.
Very different.
Science dude.
Yes.
Yeah, very.
I picked the wrong word. I am bad.
And you met him at a gaming convention.
So, yeah.
Science fiction convention.
That puts a hole in my
theory. You should persuade him to come to Gen Con in 2015.
Are we talking about this stuff yet, or is
what? I don't know. I'm just trying to imagine. What kind of D&D scenario does a Jesuit monk run?
Well, based on the conversations that you already had with him, it may well be hard science fiction and kind of awesome.
It is true.
Yeah. Or it's a pure dungeon bash using the catacombs.
New.
LARPing under the Vatican. Would anything be cooler?
I can't think of
anything. Not being murdered by the Tyrolean guard.
Some of them have got to be gamers.
Or at least LARPers do. They dress up pretty odd, so...
That's true.
The threshold must be high.
Only so you're not looking at the guys who aren't dressed like that.
Mm.
The ultimate disguise?
I suspect so. Anyway, I think we've probably killed that dead.
Yeah, killed that topic and offended a substantial portion of the audience, so...
Indeed.
He's confused, I mean...
That's true.
We can't assume offence.
I suppose for a slight shift in setting for exactly the same idea, you could make this a base raiders campaign. Taking the urban exploration thing, you've got people looking for superpowers and interesting tech who found a base, and it started moving and they don't know how to stop it. Ah, they are in so much trouble.
Yep, that would...
I didn't even find anything cool in here.
Yet. Because that would be one of the things. If we are really in so much trouble, do we leave now without anything to show for it, or do we actually try to grab open something cupboards. Worthwhile? Yeah.
Provided you put the Apocalypse Engine as almost anything that isn't a land crawler, if it's ocean-going or submersible or an airship or a spacecraft or something, then, yeah, it drops neatly, incredibly neatly into base raiders. Yeah, it's only if it's actively trundling around the landscape that it sort of would start to stretch my credulity as the fact that nobody's gotten to it yet.
It might have been...
If it's a molebot, as opposed to a...
Disguised as a small hill?
Yeah.
Or possibly just hadn't been turned on.
Okay, admittedly I am kind of liking the vaguely hooking a sandworm idea of sort of waiting for it to come alongside and then climbing up the side, but yeah, that's probably unlikely.
Worm sign the likes of which God has never seen.
So...
Who's next?
I could go next, or Ben, who'd made a sort of a noise, could go next.
He volunteered.
Fair enough. Apparently it's the volunteering noise. We should make a note of that. Apocalypse Engine, apart from bringing to mind the Apocalypse World Engine, which brings to mind the image of a very rusty, beat-up muscle car of some sort with the hood off, but...
Yeah, kind of does.
Yeah, it does, yeah. The other thing it brought to mind for me were Apocalypse Engineers.
So these are people who are designing Apocalypse?
The place I went initially was Cold War Nuclear Weapons Program, and the idea and the... science and technology behind making better, more efficient weapons and so forth. This has been relatively well documented at this point. There are a few things that no one has officially said, yes, that's totally how these work, but people have made some informed assumptions about them. But the notion that I had was basically they're attempting to develop these weapons. At some levels they understand the maths, they understand the physics, they know that they do these things, they should get these results. But a lot of the testing that they did was to actually find out whether this was provable. They would use atmospheric sensors, these crazy things called light pipes, where they'd run a tube from the site to a testing chamber and see what it looked like up close.
Wow.
I'm not sure if they were like hollow or they basically a material that would transmit the energy faithfully enough. But yeah, they kind of, it's like...
I would kind of want a sunspot detector, so the light pipe runs to a piece of white cardboard and you're filming the cardboard.
I'm fairly confident they were... Yeah, they didn't... There's somebody
just
looking
into all over the tube. It's like, yeah.
Ooh, let me see. Yeah, they're probably...
Nuclear explosion, mark one eyeball, no.
But there was a lot of... Right back to the initial tests where they were wondering, well, you know, the atmosphere probably won't ignite. Yeah, there's a pool and all, but... So there was a level of uncertainty despite, you know, the biggest brains, the best computing hardware of the time being focused on this stuff. What I thought is possible here that during one of these tests, something really unusual happens. Basically, the reaction freezes in a couple of picoseconds. Something totally bizarre is going on and it's stuck. Or the reaction is moving insanely slowly.
Okay.
They have to find out why. But to do so, they have to go into this world which is currently being created or destroyed, or both simultaneously, by the forces involved in this reaction.
Okay. So they have to figure out a way to get past the boundary of the reaction to take measurements.
And possibly...
Or just go look.
Go and have a look and find out what's going on. You have your basic primary ignition device...
Mm-hmm.
Good old-fashioned nuclear bomb. You have a hydrogen bomb, which has two stages.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're Russian, you go for a three-stage Tsar Bomba, which is just, let's put a plutonium weapon under a hydrogen weapon under some more plutonium weapons, just to see what happens. No one lives on that island.
And after that...
Never will again.
Never will.
Yeah. So that's good. The idea that this thing happens, and they're looking at the maths, and either... The fact that the reaction is running the way it is means that something's fundamentally broken. They have to go and unstick it, so stuff dissolves normally, or it's the initial moment of an explosion that is just going to be vastly bigger than they anticipated. And, you know, objects orbiting around the planet anticipated. So they need to go in and defuse it mid-fusion sequence.
Just to clarify, are we talking about a device that is... Because what I'm imagining is effectively sort of somebody looking towards the test site, and you have this fireball that's just sitting there.
Yeah.
And the people walking up will be literally doing the, oh, watch it, there's a bit of fire there, no, it's okay, we can work around.
Ooh, that's...
Yeah, so the microsecond photography they have of there's these balls of plasma with distortions on the surface, which, you know, this speculates created by imperfections in the casing of the device and things like that. And these spikes that run from the weapon platform has guidelines. And the initial radiant heat is causing them to explode into flames faster than the air because it conducts the energy slightly better. Apparently it's called a rope trick.
Huh.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
In your scenario, you've got this ball of effectively frozen plasma.
Mm-hmm.
Does it still react the way plasma does?
No. The basis of time is strange. Something... And
okay, so it's affecting time.
Amongst other things, yeah.
Mm.
The way it interacts with the world is basically broken, and it's effectively a portal into another world. And the idea would be kind of an examination of why they're doing this, why they're working on these weapons, and the idea would be to explore... the Cold War mindset of going and making something capable of burning away cities, which in the pure intellectual thing are things of beauty, things of great works of art, but they're also horrific machines of destruction.
Okay. From the point of view of the game, that would tend to imply that your players are science dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got an idea of what's on the other side of the plasma barrier?
It would be a sort of a dream quest thing, to a degree. It would be sort of examining why... this event happened because of the world that it's set in and the elements that come together.
Okay. Are you thinking something a bit narrative?
Oh, yeah, extremely. I mean...
Okay.
I mean, if you want to go run around the nuclear dungeon fighting fusion imps or something, it'd be fun too. But, it'd be more of a psychological thing.
Okay. Neat.
So we're looking something squarely in the indie game department, I'm suspecting.
Yeah, I think so.
Possibly something proprietary.
unless you go with the bizarre allegorical dungeon, just that you can have fusion imps.
Weirdly enough,
the idea that I came up with kind of started from a very similar place, mm-hmm. and then went howlingly sideways, as often happens, because where I started was the images of the very instant bombs were going off and things. They looked like pollen.
Mm.
It's just these very modular things. And I was thinking of, I don't have a great degree of backstory for it, but the idea that you have this frozen explosion that's portable, and it can be used to run things.
So that's what's at the heart of an energy black box.
Yeah. It is being used as an engine. I mean, the most obvious one is you stick it in water, it's going to turn into steam.
Probably quite rapidly.
Yeah.
It's a snapshot.
Yeah. And so you have this spy game or pulpy something or other of basically who has the literally hot potato. Who has the apocalypse engine?
Okay, so it's the first one and everybody wants it. And
yeah, I mean, for all we know, we found that on a crashed starship or something, but and people don't understand it. They know that it's really hard to contain, but man-portable, very easy to track, and everyone wants it.
Cool.
Yeah, okay, that sounded like a game of Mousetrap, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's very much, you know, you are operatives from something or other. You have this thing, and everyone knows it. Your next 48 hours are going to be exciting.
Yep.
That idea crosses over quite nicely with Ben's one. Just
it does.
If you go with the whole something went badly wrong during a weapons test, if you imagine that somebody is running around with a baseball or basketball or whatever ball-sized explosion, it's very much a case of, okay, this bomb was supposed to go off. It didn't. But the readings coming back are a little bit weird because, you know, it's obvious that the primary went off. I mean, they can see all the signals. Yeah, the primary went off. Nothing else did. They get there and they find that there's this hole in the casing where it's just melted its way straight out the bottom.
Mm.
Somebody took it.
So the game at that point is to detect where it went.
Yeah.
And get
so
it back.
Who stole a frozen nuclear explosion? And, you know, hey, brief side note. How did they steal a frozen nuclear explosion?
Did they
and what
steal
happens
it?
If the damn thing ever thaws out?
Indeed. Oh, yes, so somebody hiding behind a rock to interdict a weapons test and nick the 0.000 microsecond result.
Yeah, and they're not even stealing the weapon. They're stealing the result of the weapon.
It might thaw slowly. It's still bad.
Yes.
Yeah. Going back to Ben's original idea, the idea of a dungeon bash inside a fusion reaction is slowly coming together in my head. So you would have different levels of, maybe part of what's slowing it down is consciousness. It's starting to become conscious, so there are parts of it that they're not actually that conscious. They're just imps wandering around going blah, 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 blah. You kill them off.
Mm-hmm.
But there are various places inside the dungeon where you've got creatures that are brighter and wondering what they're for. So you either have to tell them, or snow them, or figure out a way of maintaining their ignorance.
That would be a mammoth moral quandary.
Wouldn't it, though?
And an interesting lens through which to look at the whole Cold War mindset thing that we were talking about, because the scientists left to their own devices may be among the people least likely prone to that kind of introspection by that point. But being confronted with that kind of questioning intelligence that is in itself innocent of purpose.
Indeed.
Yikes.
And whether or not they have any knowledge of what is outside the bubble, who knows?
That's cool.
The extremity of a bubble is its consciousness. That is how it experiences the world. Its sense of touch and taste involves
licking it with plasma.
Yeah, raging firestorm. And or the moral quandary that leapt to mind for me was the idea that you've birthed consciousness, a civilization, a universe
simultaneously.
It may be all these things at once. But is that a good thing? Do you really want this on your doorstep? Is the right thing to do to restore the explosion to its proper course?
And let that little universe burn itself out in a heartbeat.
And also, you're at ground zero. You're probably not going to live through that.
There is that.
So yeah, it's like, what are the consequences? What's the reason that you take steps to resolve something?
So the game is more about your choices than it is about what you're capable of, which a normal dungeon bash is normally about. Interesting. Okay.
That would be a really interesting idea, and I just had an idea for an ending for it that dark feels. But
tell us about the feels, Kevin.
Save us for wounding us at the appropriate moment in the game.
I don't know. The thing that occurred to me was the number of people involved in kind of tech development who had religious backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have someone whose solution to the moral quandary is basically to explain existence, explain what's outside, explain that this place is...
inimical to the universe that came before it.
Inimical to the universe that comes before it, but it's okay. And basically giving religion to things and talking about the whole it's not how long you live, everyone gets a lifetime thing. And and going with there is another world after this one, and it's okay, I'll go too.
Nice.
Feels...
yeah. So a deathbed watch, effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would... you're right, that's total spoilers, but no, that's a good one.
It's a possible ending, because once you get into the maze and actually start meeting the people there, it's up to the players, I would think, how that ends. But that would be a good one, I think.
Nice.
But back to the where in the world is our pocket nuclear engine.
Where in the world is hydrogen fusion?
My first thought was the everyone wants it, and it's a rapid turnover, pulpy thing of... it's the film Ronin, where it's never actually explained what all the spies are fighting over, it's just this mysterious suitcase. That kind of thing. But then the secondary thought occurred to me of if this was just what high-level engines were, this was a known thing, what would that look like? And I still don't have a particularly great idea, but I was thinking kind of culture level for me and Bank's ability to reshape the world if you have that amount of energy to throw at things.
Interesting.
And then there was the secondary thing of, in order to make that a little bit more interesting and containable, what happens if we have a society that's had a bit of a information comprehension backslide, and the industrial base has collapsed a bit, but society hasn't kind of gone full Mad Max on things. It's just that you know that there are machines.
Uh-huh.
And they run on these particular boxes. And you know that opening them is bad. And there are a finite number of them. But if you have one, you can accomplish great things.
And if you have one, all the other villagers nearby are going to want it too.
Yes!
But they're not going to want to amalgamate, because that would be the friendly thing to do.
Yeah, you know, it might be that there are thousands of things all over the place. They're just really cool things to have.
Right.
And nobody understands that eventually they need maintenance.
And once in a while, one of them goes pop.
I hadn't thought that far ahead, really, but it was more of a kind of... I wasn't thinking full-on collapse to the point where you're talking about praising the machine spirit level of technological backsliding, but the whole kind of Chinese room thing where you can know how to use a piece of technology without really comprehending what it's doing to any great way. And it turns out that everyone has a bit of a tiger by the tail. And kind of you could scale the setting for degrees of grimness or hilarity based on how many of them there are, how far things backslid, but also the idea of what people in a world which has backslid a bit would do if you had this ability that you could stick in a bulldozer and then quietly move mountains over the course of a couple of weeks.
Okay.
What would people be doing?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. And also the idea of their ubiquity made me think of a Bob the Angry Flower comic, where world peace is achieved by giving every single person their own nuclear device.
Yeah.
It's like, see, the system is perfect. Everyone is happy. Perfect world peace, distant flesh, punctuated by the odd nuclear explosion.
The thing that occurred to me for your idea with the whole, there's been this massive explosion, things have broken down. What occurred to me for it was that rather than the Dream Quest thing, is that you've got people figuring out that the entire reason the problem has frozen and everything is the model's broken down.
Ooh, they used it up, or...
No.
No.
Basically, the world's ability to process what they've just done is broken down like Minecraft.
Right.
Because we're in a model world.
They've glitched.
Yeah. They glitched reality. And then
and
there's
by
the
way, don't look behind the moon.
Very much so. It would be that was my idea of where I thought you were going with it initially. Oh. This is a don't look behind the moon scenario.
Cool. No, that's excellent.
This is causing me to have flashbacks to my goddamned workplace, and I hate you.
Why?
You're just pissed because Minecraft has better water modeling.
Yes! Yes, I am!
Okay, so the idea of models breaking is causing you existential doubt?
No, it just reminded me of the number of times of, they were doing a model run, it fell over again, they don't know why.
Well, now we do know
why. The people who make the software don't know why.
The people inside the software, who are supposed to be charting all this and writing it down and posting it on the machines that will tell the people in the top world, i.e. you, figured out how to switch it off.
After a great adventure.
After a great adventure. To extend their own existence.
Yeah.
Because we figure out that if this runs to Terminus, the world ends.
I am imagining a situation where you're being attacked by, I don't know, some kind of hydrogen imps. And then when two of them butt heads, there's this enormous fireball and one helium imp.
Sentient laddering up. Okay.
I would also be remiss if I did not mention a movie which I believe was called Quantum Quest, which was essentially a look to a certain extent at quantum or possibly atomic physics as it relates to how stars work, done in the form of a CGI cartoon. I believe it may have involved Dave the Photon.
I want to meet Dave the Photon.
I saw this film at ChiCon a couple of years ago.
So it's out there.
It's out there. So I will...
Sight unseen, it feels to be very much like a agnostic version of VeggieTales.
Yes. With shades of, I'm an amendment to be and I'm hoping that they'll ratify me, but yes. I have seen Dave and the Giant Pickle.
That's kind of creepy.
Okay, so we've had nuclear explosion as emotion quest, frozen nuclear explosion as...
Maltese Falcon.
Maltese Falcon.
And best
of engines.
Yeah.
Slash... Pulp Fiction, because one of the things I was thinking of, okay, so what's in the briefcase? Obviously, it's a stolen nuclear explosion. Duh!
That would explain where you get the eerie glow every time somebody opens it. Yeah.
Also Repo Man.
Repo Man! That explains Repo Man so much.
Yeah, well, it does.
Well, actually, no, it explains the original version of Repo Man. Nothing could explain that cleaned up for TV edited of it that I've seen.
The melon
farmer. Forget you, melon farmer, was a personal favourite.
Then... guided my adolescence quite a lot, actually, yeah.
We should bring that back as a real swear.
Yeah.
But melon farmer!
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good to me that both of my angles in some way, particularly the engines one and the Don't Look Behind the Moon one, are, in retrospect, Minecraft-inspired, which is weird because I haven't been playing Minecraft, but the whole thing of where the system breaks down, as opposed to what people who can build anything would be doing with their spare time.
Apparently building a logic gate from gunpowder and torches.
Yeah, some people will be building useful infrastructure, other people will be building, you know what I'm going to build? I'm going to build the world's biggest cube!
I will build a glass cube and then cut it away from the ground very carefully.
Yeah.
I did build an enormous tree once. Well, because there's a procedural rules on how Minecraft trees were built, and so it was possible to just keep scaling the thing up. So I built an enormous tree.
I saw
it had a staircase in the middle.
I saw video footage of somebody who managed to hack something that you could take 3D Kinect imagery and import it into Minecraft so that it was pixel scale. So there was this absolutely gigantic mountain-sized expression of himself doing a Buddy Christ or something, and he was kind of hollowing it out and building this massive complex. There was definitely one like that for Darwinia. Somebody made this gigantic Darwinian.
Nice.
Anyway.
Oh, now it's me?
Apparently.
It's you.
All right, I apparently went in some slightly different directions. Because I focused on the actual apocalypse bit. It put me in mind of... Well, one of the first things it put me in mind of was a game from 1993 called The Chaos Engine. Though it was apparently also called Soldiers of Fortune in the US for the Super Nintendo and the Sega systems.
Chaos Engine is a much better title. Also, it's been re-released recently.
Yes. On Steam, I believe.
And good old games.
It was a, I suspect, fairly generic engine in the sort of top-down, slightly behind, run-and-gun kind of thing, but it did basically have people going through a world that had collapsed and things had gone very strange, trying to shoot their way to making the world better. As you do. So there was that, and yeah, there was the Chaos Engine was the cause of all this. What they were trying to do was get to the machine and shut it down.
Right.
Similarly, there is, without putting in too many spoilers, there is the TV show Revolution.
Okay.
Where, again, the world has fundamentally changed and has gone, from a certain point of view, wrong, but certainly very different and very much more dangerous. There was
still
also,
counts as an apocalypse.
Still counts as an apocalypse. There was also the comic from, a series from the British comic Eagle called The Tower King.
Okay. What was that about?
That was about a solar power satellite. Something goes wrong with a solar power satellite, it malfunctions in some way, and electricity stops working. Yes, I should point out that this was published 30 years before the show Revolution. Yeah, it ran for, I think, about 30 episodes in Eagle, so it was a fairly short story by, I suspect, today's standards, given number of pages. But yes, it did have a quite recently collapsed society.
Okay.
And so, yeah, where I went with was Apocalypse Engine is, okay, doing my trick of taking it absolutely literally. Somebody has switched on a device or a device has been built, which has caused a massive change to the world.
Okay, so your game starts post-change.
But whatever only the, just.
Whatever the Apocalypse Engine does, it has already done it and cannot be stopped.
Well, maybe it can be turned off again.
Oh, okay. Mm. So it's a process rather than an action.
So what sort of change are we talking about? There's the arresting electricity.
The arresting electricity is a classic, but has been a little bit done to death recently.
There's Ice Nine.
Ooh.
Which one was that one?
Is that a Vonnegut one?
Yeah.
It was an isomer of water with a freezing temperature of well above what we understand as freezing. Yeah. And this Ice Nine happens, it gets out in the environment and starts crystallizing water.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Just starts spreading.
Huh. So all free water becomes ice. It's warm, it's fine, it's just water becomes a solid. Try not to die, kids!
Huh. Yeah. There are isomers of ice, and I think Ice Nine exists. It's just that you let water freeze at a certain pressure and it arranges itself.
Yeah.
It's way less dangerous than that.
I think you need quite a lot of pressure and not very much temperature from recollection, because it's down in the low Kelvins and it's up in the megapascal range.
Yeah.
I think I could be wrong.
Reality is being a spoilsport, but anyway.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, I've basically got sort of two parts of the Apocalypse Engine one. The first one is the, okay, something has happened. Go with a classic. Some technological wonder has gone wrong. So it could be the solar power satellite has wiped out electricity. We could go with something from, I think, a Frank Herbert book, where something happens such that effectively any fuel or ignition source that can catch fire does.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Yeah, gunpowder, not really an option. Petrol, nope. Safety matches, nope. That was a fairly nasty short story.
I'm just looking around this house and thinking, we, in that circumstances, are not going to do so well. Given that I have candle holders on top of bookcases.
Yeah, we know people who would do worse.
That's true.
And they are called barbecue owners.
That is true.
Indeed.
So, there's that one. You could have a bit of fun with some of the plans for mitigating global warming by putting effectively a colossal Fresnel lens between the Earth and the Sun. What if that goes wrong and hello, new ice age?
Hmm.
Huh. And yeah, basically overdoing it.
Overdoing it. And so, yeah, the object of the exercise is how do we stop this? I mean, if you went with the solar power satellite one but didn't want to switch off electricity, you could have a solar power satellite that is in fact delivering vastly more power than anybody planned.
So there's no way to catch it, and that's whipping around the Earth, carving a fiery trench in the Earth.
Oh, it's possible. It's locking in, it's locking onto the various sites it's supposed to beam power to, and toasting them.
Mm. Several times a day.
Yeah. So yeah, Apocalypse Engine as this is the thing you've got to stop.
There's
or this is the thing that's causing the problem.
There's the climate shift problem in Sean McMillan's book. I can't remember which book it was.
Eyes of the Calculator, yeah. and that kind of... Yep.
Where, in response to an apparent coming ice age, a grey goo situation was purposefully set up that was guided, that was going to take the moon and turn it into a mirror to help warm the world. It was...
startlingly effective.
Well, also, the ice age didn't happen, but the thing's still growing.
That is a problem.
Mm.
The flip side of it, of the Apocalypse Engine one, and one that is a little bit more tongue-in-cheek and based rather too much on a certain Megadeth music video, is the idea of we have an apocalypse, we can go with the classic nuclear war, we go with the oil wars situation if you want to lean backwards to battle truck. Doesn't really matter. But you've got a world in which there isn't a lot of travel anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of isolated communities. And you've got, possibly, just because I rather like the idea, the one working train left in existence, dubbed the Apocalypse Engine, because what else would you call it?
Yeah, that works.
Possibly where somebody has taken the reactor from a submarine, somehow jury-rigged it into a train.
Interesting.
That wouldn't be that difficult.
Well, if you knew exactly what you were doing...
You've got something that runs on steam anyway, and you're just...
heating up the steam in a rather more direct fashion.
Yeah.
And so you've got, presumably, the players being some of the crew of the Apocalypse Engine.
So that makes it a travelling campaign. You're going from place to place.
Yep. Possibly you
doing your grass on the thing.
You possibly riff on the postman, in that this thing's been stitched together not just as a, well, it's a way of getting around, but a case of how do we put the world back together?
Nice.
Depending on how far flung and futuristic you want to go with it, and how, you know, how out there you want to be,
mm-hmm.
maybe the Bering Strait rail bridge actually got completed. Nice. Maybe it is possible to take this train all the way from London, through the Channel Tunnel, right across Europe and Russia, across the Bering Strait.
Across Alaska, down through Canada.
Yeah, all the way across. Maybe you can reach an awful lot of the world because of the rail infrastructure, and the somewhat grimly named Apocalypse Engine is what's trying to pull the place back together.
Interesting. Okay.
That's cool. I have had several other unrelated ideas in rapid succession, but we can keep digging at the global travel thing.
Well, that's basically where I got to as far as Apocalypse Engine. I just rather like the idea of this.
Well, it makes a really good setting. I'm kind of imagining something where, with a little bit of tweaking, most of the time you run on rails that are already there, but there are some places where you have it set up so that it will slap down a rail in front of you, or a panel of rails, but you're kind of creeping forward so that you can dismantle what's behind you and bring it around the front.
Shades of Inverted World. Yeah. Yes.
Just to get to a different stretch of rail, which would increase your range somewhat, I think. I'm kind of getting a weekly show structure vibe. So that this week on Apocalypse Engine, our heroes are blah, 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 blah.
Well, there was the show, I think it was Arc 2 or something like that. It wasn't a train, but it was this weird-looking
gigantic RV thing.
Yeah.
And they'd splice in slightly stock footage-y looking things of the guy with the jetpack.
Yes.
I think they had the guy with the jetpack for like 3 days, so they took as much film as they could.
They had lots of takeoff and landing sequences and not a lot else. Yeah. And yeah, they were going through a... It was on when I was a kid, so I was never 100% sure what was supposed to have happened, but they seemed to be in deserts a lot.
Pretty rockin' army.
Just for vibe, you've got things like Kung Fu, starring Mr. Carradine, or the TV show of the Hulk. So these people arrive out of nowhere, fix something, and move on.
Yeah.
Avatar the Last Three Amigos.
Or the Lost Hobo.
Yeah.
Or Avatar the Last Airbender for chunks of the show.
Yeah.
I actually come up with a reason, though our planet may not be entirely suitable for it, why you're driving a train across most of the world. Whatever terrible thing has happened, you've got a way of fixing it. You just have to place a device at the antipodes of the one you've already built.
Okay.
So you've got to... Oh, wow.
Or if you want to stretch it out, you need to make a network.
Indeed. Maybe you've got something centred on the train that you're dragging around, but I thought, to make it a little bit more epic, you're trying to get to the far point. There's definitely antipodes that are both on land. I'm not sure if they're connected by a rail network.
As the saying goes, your antipodes most likely have fins, but there are a fair number of them that are on land. I am desperately trying to figure out which the end of South America is.
There's going to be somewhere in South America that's going to have a place somewhere in China.
Well, New Zealand's antipodes are somewhere in Spain.
Yeah.
Or if it's not in Spain, it's off the coast by not much. Australia would hit something.
Yeah.
Okay, so should the game happen, you'd need to knock together that map. But that's really interesting. You are trying to reach those two points.
To switch a thing on.
If you've got to bracket the entire world, then it's not even a case of, okay, we plant one device where we start. It's a case of you need to figure out as close as damn it ahead of time where to place one device so that you can actually get to the other spot. Because it's not just a case of is it on land, it's is it on land we can reach? Because even if we assume, okay, we can get the train as far as Singapore, I think... Theoretically, assuming the lines existed, and assuming you could cross the Bering Strait, you could get as far as Singapore, and then start boat hopping your way to Australia, and then to New Zealand, in order to place something to match up with the other device that you've built, put in Spain.
So you make a train ferry just to get... Oh my god, that would be a horrible journey.
I think at that point you're probably abandoning the...
Abandoning the train.
Abandoning the train.
Or just taking a magazine. Sorry. It's my problem. I'll deal with it.
I wasn't thinking from the...
Sorry, it's just the idea of a trans-global train trip. I'll take a magazine. This kind of has been circling in my head.
You have issues, man.
Yes, I have subscriptions.
That would be an awesome campaign.
It would. What came to mind when you were talking about all of the fuel has exploded or things and everything shifted in that direction reminded me of a book called The Wind-Up Girl by an author whose name I'm doubtless going to mispronounce.
Paolo Bassigalupi?
Yes.
Or Bassigalupi?
And that is a fantastic if grim book, but it's very much there is no more fuel anymore. The energy storage that is available is springs.
So pure mechanical energy.
At the same time.
There was a secondary thing in that going on. Food scarcity, not because it's not around, but because it's all been, what's the word? companies have said that they own it now.
It is a global post-apocalypse, both because we ran out of fuel and because all of the big corporations like Monsanto released tailored plagues to kill all of the food that they didn't personally own, tried to corner the market, except they all did it at the same time.
So somebody was making a point.
It's a very well done book.
Speaking of people with subscriptions.
Very, very well done book. Also, notably, grim, but very well imagined. But anyway, the whole idea of you have that setting, and then you have someone who manages to make an engine work.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah.
This reminds me of a consequences of a very silly conversation I had in university, where, as you do at that stage in life, people complaining that the constant of pi was too small because their drinks were considerably undersized to what they could have been. If you could, like, bump pi up a couple of places, you would get a bit more drink.
No, my brain just went, snap!
So would physics.
Yeah. She's like, other terrible idea that I had, I've got no idea what you said that inspired this. It was the whole trans-bearing straight train thing, but I don't think I can blame you for any of the rest that follows. The idea of the apocalypse engine being, you know, this doomsday scenario that we're trying to avert in terms of the Norse legend about that you have to trim people's toe and fingernails because otherwise they'll be used to build this boat that will herald the apocalypse. And it turns out it's not a boat, it's a train, and there's tracks made out of nails. And so you've got this ghost train that's trying to break through the veil and has to be stopped. And that's as far as I got. Yeah.
That sounded like a really bad dream.
It did, but I was awake.
I see. Okay.
That happens sometimes.
Uh-huh. Stop looking at my toenails. Stop it.
Yep. I'm not sure they take your toenails. You have mutant toenails.
Yeah, calm down, Howard Hughes.
Has this couch been properly disinfected?
So, we are now down to my other idea and Gulo a medley teas. From Gulo Tea.
Yeah,
indeed.
Okay.
Do you want to mercy kill those first, or...?
I think we go with Tonya's idea and fair then enough. Mercy kill the idea from Gulo Tea, though remember the fact that you use the word medley.
Okay, fine. Idea number two from me. I wasn't sure whether to set this terrestrially or interstellar. So you have your place, be it a town or your planetary system. And there is a convoy that is heading towards your place and or planetary system. These people get their way wherever they go because they have, as one of the things that's part of the convoy, an apocalypse engine. If the players are locals, the job is to sneak into the camp and find out what it does and either copy or destroy it. If the players are part of the convoy, then their job would be to basically hide the fact that the apocalypse engine is a total fake. There is no apocalypse engine. It's just that they've got this huge ship. They've made it as disgusting looking as possible. It's leaking traces of radiation. It's leaking traces of bioactives. If it's a truck, then it looks disgusting because it's got rivulets of various those shouldn't be in nature colours.
Why do I think this is a religious order or procession or something? Why am I picturing it? Did you?
No.
Okay. This is the imagery that's popped into my head.
Being a mobile village, for want of a better word, you move in and you say, you guys are going to feed us now, or we hit the button.
That's why I was like,
that an apocalypse engine is a bad thing, but they may not actually know what one is.
Yeah. The job of the tramps is to basically refill the reservoirs.
The toxic waste, yeah, reservoir.
The quote-unquote toxic waste, the quote-unquote, anything that'll read as fissile, but actually isn't that bad.
glow stick remnants and some cyanobacteria.
Possibly not even we push the button. I mean, if everybody's got really good grease paint that makes them look mouldy and leprous and things, it's you want to sell us stuff at really good prices so that we leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would work too.
The classic. So how much is a room for the night for somebody who can level this place with a single fireball?
This looks like a really nice town. We're thinking of, it might take a little while for us to earn the money that you're going to charge us for fuel and things, so we might settle down for a while. And everyone's going,
Have some fuel!
Do you want some muffins as well on your way out of town?
That was kind of the vibe I was going with. Mm.
That's a cool scam.
Just have it be a total scam. So either your player characters are maintaining the scam, but you're running a little low on watch plates and...
Mm-hmm.
used, I don't know, anything that would work to make your apocalypse engine look suitably, we don't want this here.
Canisters from X-ray machines. that you can sort of port the wastewater through, so it'll give just enough clicks if somebody's got a Geiger counter.
Yeah.
There is a slightly different angle, though. Like the spin off what I was thinking is that this procession may be the folks in sort of a wasteland kind of world. This is a procession and a calling for folks who can actually deal with the nightmarish toxic remnants of the previous civilization. These are the folks who go from place to place taking in the malformed and dealing with places where they've uncovered barrels with trifoils on them and things like that. And
it's okay.
Like, so it's like a...
Like a mobile leper colony.
Pretty much, yeah. But
except
they,
nobody's dying.
Yeah, nobody... No, yeah, no. That's a... That's probably
they're dying at a slower rate than they should be.
It's a relative thing. Yeah, it's the idea that they're kind of going from place to place helping folks deal with their nuclear waste problems as they see them. A little relatively low-key thing, but yes. The idea of sort of like a gaudy, rusted, splashed with weird colours caravan thing squeaking away is kind of cool.
Yeah, I kind of had envisioned it being a single huge truck in the middle of the caravan. All evils at once, but it makes more sense to break it up if it's actually a humanitarian venture.
Well, it could still have the huge truck if you went with one of those absolutely enormous municipal rubbish trucks.
Or one of the grossly oversized mining dump trucks.
Nice. Yes, one of those. The ones where the wheel is more than the height of a person.
Yeah, they have...
I totally want to drive one of those one of these days.
They have ladders to get to the other ladders to get to the driver's compartment. It's like, whoa. And the thing is, they look like the Tonka toys.
Except enormous.
Except your brain says, that's not a toy, it looks like a truck. Oh, except it's a truck, which is three times the size of a truck.
Why is it park next to toys?
It's quite
Actually, there were those pictures, Craig, that you had for a while of giant machines kind of parking over cities or over markets.
Yes, I will see if I can figure out who did them. But yeah, the absolutely enormous things with... I want to say dune buggy, but that conjures up a very specific thing. But basically, enormous vehicles in a desert environment where the tyres themselves would probably be 20 stories high.
I think I know, sort of image. It's like a classic sci-fi book.
That kind of vibe, yeah. And there was another one where you've got this, what looks like a market or souk that has sprung up underneath one of these things.
Yeah.
Actually, and I wasn't initially thinking anything quite that big, but... That also works.
If you go back for like a more reasonable scale, the classy thing would be one of the old-fashioned steam tractors with the spinning governors and on the top and so forth. I think they're quite stylish.
Yeah, lots of brass frimbles and frambles.
Yeah.
Wobbling around as it works.
I had thought with the, just sort of jumping back to the Apocalypse Engine title and what you'd mentioned about, yeah, we have an Apocalypse Engine, give us the stuff or we'll push the button. That was the idea of a very different sort of apocalypse. What if somebody managed to build themselves a cornucopia?
Ooh.
Or managed to, in fact, mass-produce cornucopia? It's a device. You push the button, it'll give you anything you want.
That does make society go away fairly rapidly.
Yeah.
Well, certainly society is we're familiar with it.
Exactly. That gives you a fairly neat outside context problem, because we're so used to commerce.
Yeah. What does the world look like when commerce goes away?
Certain level of scarcity.
Yeah.
Not scarcely on scarcity, to be fair. But
Yeah, quite how you go from everybody gets a cornucopia box to trackless waste, I'm not sure, but yeah, I'm sure somebody can come up with something.
Now, the pessimist of me says everybody gets a cornucopia box, and 2 weeks later, fire shouting.
Yes, finally, we can do peace. Everybody has what they want. Boom. And the occasional nuclear explosion.
Exactly. Your dog has messed on my lawn for the last time. Last time, have a nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
Bit of an own goal there, but...
Have a hand grenade, yes.
Yeah.
Shades of... Which one was it? Singularity Sky from Charles Stross.
Oh, yes.
What happens when a very controlled world gets cornucopia machines? That's a comparatively minor detail as part of the story, but...
And it wouldn't have to be pessimistic.
Mm-hmm.
To still count as an apocalypse. No. A very fluffy apocalypse.
Yeah, cozy catastrophe is a genre. It usually involves more deaths, but...
And English people.
It has to be very cozy, yes. that was just an idea that had occurred to me. Gulo T took Apocalypse Engine, didn't really have anything specifically for it, but...
Then the pun war started.
And came up with Apocalypso Engine.
Okay.
Not based on, I think, the Mel Gibson film
Apocalypto.
Yes, this one is Apocalypso, as in
music.
The musical genre. The Banana Boat song.
Yes.
Some of the work of Harry Belafonte. this kind of thing. When kicking this around my own self, I came up with a couple of things, one of which actually crosses over with the Apocalypse Engine train.
Uh-huh.
And one of which is possibly recognisable from a game I ran, a piratey game I ran at one point, the idea of weaponized calypso music.
Oh, no.
Where you airdrop a device that just sends out music, makes the population ignore everything else in favour of enthusiastic performance, dance and musical numbers.
I have a vague recollection. This was one of your Skype games when you were living in Perth.
I can neither confirm nor deny that. Anyway, that was not this one. That was Escape from Funky Island.
That's true. That's true. That was far more around 70s than...
Yes, there was a cursed mirror ball washed up on the beach, and...
Everybody wanted to partay.
It's amazing that you've only recently discovered Quags.
It is, kinda.
Cursed mirror ball, I've forgotten the pirate's name, the bad guy's name from...
Monkey Island?
From Monkey Island.
LeChuck. LeChuck.
Ghost of Mark.
Yeah, the pirate LeChuck wearing a white flared trouser disco suit. I think at one point people found an improvised mirror ball where they had taken Murray the Skull and glued bits of glass to him. it was a bit cheesy. So that was my idea for Apocalypso Engine, the comedy. The very slightly more serious one would be the notion that there has been an enormous actual apocalypse.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, maybe there's been a plague, or plague would probably work well in the circumstance. And the last remnants of humanity, regrettably, I did check into the facts of this, and I'm late by a little under a year.
Mm-hmm.
The last remnants of organisation, as it were, are the passengers and crew of the Caribbean cruise ship Calypso. And so it's very much the Apocalypse Engine train thing, except you've got a cruise ship.
Yeah, could work, so, actually.
That the Love Boat crossover.
Yeah, it's a crossover of the Love Boat with, I don't know, Mad Max. trying to keep things together. I like the idea that when they figured out what had happened, they very carefully lowered one of those little bosun chairs off the side and added a few extra letters to the name of the boat. And yes, you've got the Calypso, which there was actually a cruise ship, which was for a time called the Calypso. Unfortunately, the damn thing got beached for scrap April last year.
Oh.
Thereabouts.
Seems like a fitting tribute, though.
Well, it wasn't actually called the Calypso at that time. Calypso was one of the many names it had over its lifetime, but...
And it's not one of the ones which has been abandoned, is currently drifting off the coast of Newfoundland breeding...
Breeding rats?
Breeding, yes. Generations of cannibal rats.
No, that's a different one. This one...
And a different sort of apocalypse. Cause
yeah.
Wasn't there one that was possibly heading for Ireland?
That would be the one Ben is referring to.
Yeah, it's just kind of drifted away.
The Russian Arctic cruise liner, which tells you everything you need to know about Russians.
Harsh.
Yeah.
Hey, let us go for a... Well, actually, to be fair, if there was the option of taking some sort of holiday thing where I was able to go to Antarctica and to play on an iceberg, I would be all over that shit. Unfortunately, they're actually really expensive and...
For science.
There are holiday-ish excursion versions of them. They're just quite expensive. Also, you've got to get yourself to the bottom of South America.
Oh, Tierra del Fuego.
That'd be the one?
Yeah.
So, yes, those are my two options for Apocalypso Engine.
I don't know, I'm liking the idea of music that changes the world.
Mm.
Yeah.
Again, it's kind of a cozy catastrophe thing. If your players, if their job is... Oh, my God, sorry, I've just mentally created the all-bard... player group, and I apologise.
Party of bards!
Mm-hmm. Their idea is their job being to travel the world and spread the apocalypse song.
Please let it be the Banana Boat song. Please!
Unfortunately, I do know the Banana Boat song, but what's coming to brain is the Happy Banana song, which is a different thing entirely.
Though equally catchy.
You can send me a link, because I don't know the Happy Banana song.
I will send you a link. It's a YouTube link.
You don't want to sing it? No. Earworm our audience in their disguises all over the world?
If they click on the YouTube link, they will be earwormed.
And we've got a sticker on iCalypso as well, so just in case.
Well, that is the other one. I mean, if I wanted to go with a less cruise line and more oceanographic one, I believe the Jacques Cousteau ship Calypso is currently being refitted.
Okay.
Interesting.
There was a small sinking issue. in that it sank.
I knew she had a sister boat that Mr. Cousteau's son, whose name escapes me right now, had made. It was quite a lot bigger and had the egg beater wind power.
Mm.
A very pretty boat, but that's been going around for a while. I didn't realise they were lofting the Calypso again.
Well, according to Wikipedia, which is a wonderful source of knowledge on all things,
mm-hmm.
though in all fairness, their maritime section is actually really good.
Awesome.
But exhaustive details on the Calypso and the fact that it used to be a Royal Navy minesweeper.
Considering some of the places that Mr. Cousteau went, I would want that kind of toughness.
Keel lay down in the 40s and...
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, she's doing very well.
Indeed. Grand old dame. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, there's that.
Actually, yes, spreading the music that changes the world, that's all I had for that. So if anybody else has an idea...
You could totally see it an Apocalypse World game on a cruise liner. Probably be as seemly and fun as an actual cruise.
Well, we do need to test drive Apocalypse World at some point.
Mm.
We do. We have yet to get around to playing that.
This is the bit where we all stare at Ben, because of all of us, he's the one who actually has a copy.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you? Or am I
no.
grossly slandering your games?
I totally own a copy, and I vaguely comprehend rules, so that could be a thing. And it's been months since I've actually played a game.
That could provide a nice lead-in to an item from between the cushions, assuming that we've gotten everything we can out of Apocalypse Engine / Apocalypso Engine. Everybody's done the thumb-to-forehead of I got nothing, so... Yeah, so, an actual item from between the cushions.
We have one?
Very slight one.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a shout-out. Yeah, a shout-out to the Quags system from Hex Games, which...
We have finally played and thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, I ran a game of it a little over a week ago and completely forgot to mention it on the previous podcast, but yeah, that was really, really easy to run.
I hadn't slept in 36 hours and I managed to make a character without much difficulty, although... Tony helped a great deal with
the math, which, if you know my math skills, is scary.
And then fell asleep.
Before I actually got to play the character.
Yeah.
But it was okay, though, because the game was fun.
Yeah.
So, bit of a shout-out, that was really, really easy to run. It's possible it's because I was doing it wrong.
Well, there was a moment there where you had to stop the game and go looking for the magic system. And Just in case there was one.
Well, it's possible I'd missed it. I mean, it was a valid possibility.
What we did worked well, so...
Yeah. Yeah, so that I just wanted to give a bit of a shout out there that it's quite probable that what I was running was a cross between Quags as in the rulebook and Quags as dimly remembered from 12 hours of Quags games played at Gen Con. And yeah, I would not have known about the Quags system were it not for listener Bob H. mentioning the Gutter Skypes, us looking at their website and noticing that they were playing a game called Leopard Women of Venus.
Which was intriguing enough to go listen to. Yeah, also another shout-out to the Gutter Skypes, because they keep linking to us, and it's awesome. So, yes, hello to Anim, Nikki, Blind Geek, and Andros.
Yes.
And anyone else
Mr.
in
K?
There. And Mr. K? No, he's from a different podcast.
But he does crop up there a lot.
He does.
Okay, then. Shout-outs to him as well.
Wasn't your Gen Con Quags experience all filtered mostly through one GM?
Oh, yeah, that was all the same GM. That would be Thunderstep.
Well, he did good work.
Indeed.
And now you're proselytizing his one true word, and he's winning.
I did admittedly use the character sheets from those games as examples when people were asking questions, making up characters.
Fair enough.
So that was very useful.
It was. Mm. He said, what's a gimmick? Well, it could be a bit like this.
Hmm.
So, anybody got anything else?
No, I think we're done.
All right, that's goodbye from us.
See you next time.
Thanks for joining us, audience.
Ciao.
Bye.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
Ah, all right. This one comes to us from listener Bob H. Ancient Greek steam automatons.
Cool.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!